Hi, everyone. As part of our ongoing series of episodes about how companies can transform their culture, we're going to discuss what your next step should be after your culture survey concludes. I'm your host, Bill Coffin, and this is the Ethicast. Culture surveys are one of the most fundamental tools that organizations can employ as part of their efforts to measure, analyze, and transform their workplace into bastions of integrity. Whether an organization is new to conducting culture surveys, or whether it does them often, knowing what to do after the survey results come in is just as important as getting those results in the first place. This is especially true when organizations survey perceptions of their speak-up culture, where communicating post-assessment learnings and action plans can make the difference between an exercise that doesn't really change anything and one that can help an organization take a meaningful step forward on its ethics and compliance maturity journey. With us today to share his expertise is Doug Allen, Vice President of Data Strategy at Ethisphere, where he leads the company's culture solutions efforts. Doug, thanks so much for joining us. Glad to see you.
Yeah, Bill, likewise. Great to be here.
You know, we've already had a couple episodes on this program about the importance of measuring your culture and what data it can produce. But it's my understanding that, you know, that's just the first half of the whole process. After you get the results and the data, communicating what that actually means within the organization, there's a whole separate aspect of tradecraft and skill set to that as well. So can you talk about that part of the process, why it's so important, and what companies should keep in mind in terms of, you know, opportunities and challenges that may come with that?
You bring up a good point on how this, once you've had a chance to measure your culture of integrity, you are but one step along your journey. And as a matter of fact, we've here at Ethisphere in our work in measuring ethical cultures across organizations, really around the world, is we've really identified that there is not a discrete activity that one should think about in terms of measuring culture, but really it is a journey. It is a life cycle. And so along those ways, whether it's you're planning for your assessment, you're conducting the measurement, you're analyzing the results, you're informing key stakeholders, or then moving to actually improving and transforming your culture, if any piece of that puzzle is not sufficiently planned, if it's not paid attention to, you really risk falling short in your efforts to really measure and improve your speak up culture. And so you highlighted the fact that you can go through this measurement effort, you can put all these resources in doing it well, and it's a practice that everyone does. If you've seen our latest World's Most Ethical Companies data, I think it's ubiquitous. Surveys are ubiquitous in terms of a tool put in place to measure speak up culture. But to what extent do organizations then take the time to think through strategically, how do we take these results? And before we get into improving based on what we found, how do we get the information in the right stakeholders' hands at the right time to make sure that we have full buy-in, we have full support to really make these improvements a reality, and that when it is time to develop these action plans and improve, we have the right support, the right resourcing, the right understanding of what's taking place so that you're in the best position to succeed. Mm-hmm. So it really is, you know, one facet we look at when kind of constructing a plan for measuring culture for organizations is what is that post-assessment world look like for you, and sort of how much attention have you paid to it? And if you have not, we have a whole bunch of ideas on what you should be doing.
From the perspective of a company that's never done this before, what should they be really keeping in mind in terms of how long it takes to conduct an assessment, but then also all that post-assessment stuff that you just talked about, what kind of time commitment are they really looking at here? Because I can imagine companies might go into this thinking it's going to take X time, but really may take X times two, X times three.
Yeah, it's such a great question, Bill. And I'll give you my very unsatisfactory answer, and that it depends. It depends on the type of organization in place. What are the ways and decisions are made? What sort of influence does the compliance team have internally to get things done? What's the relationship with HR and other, you know, on the ground stakeholders in sort of getting the message out in various modalities? A lot of factors are at play in terms of how long you should begin to think about in terms of preparing for measuring your own culture. So just some rules of thumb. I know when we partner with organizations, we usually allocate 3 months or so, 3.5 months, 12 weeks, 14 weeks to ensure that we have enough time to sufficiently plan, measure, and assess. But looking back to the inform phase, so thinking through, okay, you've gone through the assessment, where we see a lot of organizations fall short is, are you thinking through again strategically on how you take those data points and take those insights you've gathered and getting them into the right hands? In thinking through that, Bill, we have a few different considerations I'd put in front of our audience to consider if they're in a similar position today. And so you've got several dimensions to keep track of. It's, you know, how soon can you get the information out to the various stakeholders? Who are these stakeholders? And what's the required messaging for each? You can imagine where updating your board on what you found in your latest effort to measure speak up culture and the information you provide to them varies dramatically versus those that your division leaders get or that all employees will receive. And so we have we've developed a great resource that is available to several of our members that illustrates sort of our approach in this regard. But Bill, if I can, I'll just touch on a few key points on the audience you should think of and sort of the time requirements for that. So I mentioned the board, but you know, one often overlooked group, and we've mentioned this before in other modalities, but is when you do measure your speak up culture, don't neglect turning that information around and putting it back in the hands of your entire workforce really as soon as you can. Yeah. And we don't mean give everyone a full readout of what you found, but really make sure that you capitalize on the effort you just undertook and get some key opportunity data, get some key insights, get some summary findings from that effort, put it back into the employee's hands, and really take that opportunity to thank them for speaking out, speaking up, and participating in this effort. A lot of times we hear organizations are leaning heavily on surveys as a mechanism. By following up with all employees who did have a chance to partake and, you know, quite frankly, be candid in their responses, hopefully, in that they're answering a question that could be considered sensitive and that we're asking you about speaking up comfortably and what you think about your manager, what do you think about senior leadership, really take the time to thank them, right? Ensure them that, you know, we received your message. Thank you for participating. Here's what we saw. Here's what you told us. Here's, if you're ready to make this proclamation, here's what we plan on doing about it. Here's some suggestions of where we want to take this information and make ourselves a better place to work, a better place to be. And you can imagine, Bill, that gives employees a sense of comfort in that, okay, I've been heard. And then secondly, as organizations think to measure in the future, employees remember this. And so it builds goodwill for future efforts to measure, knowing that when they do speak up and participate, that they will be heard and things will change.
You and I both know sometimes our organizations, they may undergo a process like this, not like what they see, and just sort of, you know, spike the answers or spike the results so that they don't really see the light of day. Is there ever a good reason for bearing the results, no matter what they are?
Bill, I can't think of one. Short of any sort of technological malfunction in the survey process that would credibly give doubt to the reliability of what you just measured, I can't think of a single legitimate reason otherwise why you wouldn't want to get that in the hands of stakeholders to begin that journey of improvement. I think a lot of concern that I've seen, Bill, in those situations where folks are, let's say, concerned about what the data is telling them is a lot of times organizations in that case didn't do a sufficient job of preparing leaders, preparing stakeholders before the survey went out to prepare folks to, you know, let them know what changes may be coming, right? So C-suite, business division line leaders, in particular, however decisions or action plans you think will be put forward, divisional leader level, region level, let those leaders know this effort's forthcoming. Here's what we plan on measuring. Here's what we want to find out. Here's the questions we're asking. And that gives folks, one, a chance to kind of buy into the process and weigh in. And ideally, they can support you in communicating it when you are ready to send the message out to your broader employee base to participate in this type of assessment. But also it prepares them to act on the data, it prepares them to receive the data, it prepares them to act and improve on what they've found. So that's one use case, Bill, where if you don't take the time to prepare and set, not really expectations, but just to prepare key folks internally that this is coming and here's what we plan on doing with it in some respects, you won't know the answer. You won't know the story until you actually measure. That really gets ahead of that concern or that agita in terms of, you know, when poorer than desired results come in, what to do about it.
How can the folks who are administrating a culture assessment or culture survey, how can they best work with their internal communications department to make sure that when the results come in, the communications result or the storytelling that comes afterwards is optimized?
This is such a great question, Bill. And it really comes down to, we've seen it work well in the past where there is an existing positive relationship between ENC and other support functions, including communications. Because when your results do come in, depending upon the scope in which you've measured and the perhaps the urgency with which the data suggests you should act, You really will need to rely on your partners to get, again, buy-in, to get the message out, and to get really the sufficient, I would say, authority to ensure that whatever action plans come out of this are effectively folks responsible for them are held accountable. And so that will require that, you know, you're working with HR for to see what mechanisms are in place to perhaps bake in some of these action plan outcomes into performance considerations for key leaders. To could they be considered KPIs for, again, performance for individuals in the company where it's of a high enough level to put it at that point? Your comms folks will be instrumental. Almost every engagement we've had a chance to work with, opportunities we found, whether it be at the enterprise level or perhaps at a specific team level, one of the dimensions of play was an opportunity to improve the communications in one of those dimensions, whether it's at a team level, enterprise-wide level, what have you. And to rely on those communication teams to help you do that is essential. A lot of folks we've partnered with don't have those resources on hand. So to do a little bit of shameless self-promotion, Bill, we've actually built a great content library that folks can pull from. For example, manager toolkits, we've got great sets of what we call Ethertunes and other turnkey resources that compliance leads can take and pull from, modify, rebrand as they need to, and get them in the hands of their people leaders to facilitate conversations on, for example, organizational justice or how to sufficiently report or how to feel comfortable in reporting amongst their team members. And so that's the extent that you can leverage those comms team is foundational, right? You'll need that support. And again, we've seen that enough times where that's lacking that we went ahead and built a library of content to support our partners to get it done. Yeah. But, and again, this is just another point where if you can prepare those comms teams in advance of what's coming, they certainly appreciate the heads up that their support will be needed in 3, 4, 5 months time when presumably a campaign will be needed. So anytime you can dedicate more thought to that and putting it together is only going to set you up for success down the road.
Can you think of any examples of a company that really, you know, once they got the results, they went about the communications aspect of this and the storytelling aspect of this in a really innovative or especially effective way? You looked at it, went, you know what? This company really seemed to understand the results they're getting, the audience they have, the opportunity that they can create, and they use this to a way that really impressed you. Do you have any examples you can talk about?
Oh, there's a few, Bill. Yeah, we've been privileged to work with organizations who have done things very well and others who have not. So for better or for worse, I have some what not to do examples that come to mind a little bit more quickly that I think illustrate the counterpoint of how you can do things well.
Sure.
And one of the more famous anecdotes that I always pull from is where upon seeing the results of our culture assessment, this particular organization noticed that the perceptions of the senior leadership team as both demonstrating integrity in their speech as well as their actions was lacking. In particular, the speech component really surprised this organization. The CEO in question said, "How can this be? We make it a point to discuss integrity at the forefront of every town hall meeting. We spend minutes on integrity as a core value and why it's so important and what we do about it. How can that be the case, right? How can these numbers be so low relative to either their benchmark or longitudinally speaking, whatever the case may be?" And come to find out where he was correct. CEO was correct in that the message was consistently delivered through things like town halls and so on. But when we probed a little bit deeper, we found that when looking at the attendee data for these town hall meetings or other venues in which integrity is being discussed by the senior leadership team, it was being attended by less than 10% of the organization. Right. When following through and looking at are folks actually receiving the message, you may have this fantastic message put together, beautifully crafted, the right staff and personnel delivering it. But if no one's on the receiving end, it's all for naught. Mm-hmm. And so really looking at the receiving end is, to your point earlier, Bill, is the modality you've selected to deliver this message appropriate. So is it being received? Is the messenger the right person to deliver this message? Is the message itself crafted in a way that's easily understood, given perhaps the audience's regional accommodations, education levels, experience levels? Are you able to kind of come to them to deliver that message to ensure that it is received? So if you don't account for it, it's a two-part process, right? It's the message, it's the delivery of it, but also are you looking at who and how is it received? It's an anecdote we turn to time and time again that when done well, we've seen it done well all the time, really shines in terms of improving the metrics, at least we measure as part of these assessments.
What advice would you give to organizations who are looking at this whole process and getting them to look at this not as a sort of once and done thing, but as part of sort of a cyclical effort to routinely examine, measure, analyze, transform your culture as part of an ongoing maturity journey.
We've been measuring culture for a decade now, but again, organizations around the world, and we've gone from a mindset of let's come in and take a snapshot of how your company, how your employees perceive speaking up, how they perceive integrity, how they perceive the values at any point in time. And instead we've reimagined what that looks like and really have taken a life cycle view. I mentioned at the outset of the discussion that, you know, any mature organization is at some point on this culture measurement journey. And we've actually adopted that mindset in the way we work with our partners too in delivering assessment and related services. So that includes really mapping out the entire life cycle of what one goes through, whether, again, to restate the life cycle steps. You begin with planning the effort and sort of taking into account what and how you want to measure. You execute the measurement effort, capture the relevant insights through generally a survey or other input method. You assess and evaluate what you found, determine what good looks like, and kind of assess yourself against that benchmark of good. And then what we've been talking about today is that inform step, really. How do you get the insights you've gathered and getting it in the heads and hands of key leaders, all employees, your board, whomever it may be, in a way that's appropriate for them, all ultimately arriving at the end of the flywheel or end of the cycle, which is improvement, action plans, transforming. How do you then transform and act based upon what you've communicated and seen in the data? And then that cycle just repeats the plan. And so any organization that begins their journey, Bill, with that journey in mind, tends to set themselves up for long-term success. There's always bumps along the way. If this is something you're engaging in for the first time, it's a big lift. Developing a credible survey is challenging. Getting buy-in to secure time on everyone's calendar to take the survey is challenging. You've got competing interests. You've got competing engagement surveys. You've got to hit end of quarter numbers. Folks take vacations in summertime. How do you find the right time to get in the schedule that's already quite busy at these companies to get this measurement effort done? Huge challenge. But again, if you think of it long-term, if you can position the effort as part of a broad, again, a long-term way in which you're adding value through the continuous monitoring and improvement of that culture, that, again, this is very broad strokes, but that's a great way to sort of set yourself up for success out of the gate.
To learn more about the great work that Doug and the rest of the Ethisphere culture team does with organizations around the world, be sure to check out the spring issue of Ethisphere magazine, available at magazine.ethisphere.com. And for a wealth of free reports, presentations, webinars, and more, including the foundational 8 pillars of an ethical culture, visit the Ethisphere Resource Center at ethisphere.com/resources. And finally, to connect with the Ethisphere culture team and learn how you can measure and elevate your organization's culture, please visit ethisphere.com/solutions. I'm Bill Coffin, and this has been the Ethicast. For more episodes, please visit the Ethisphere YouTube channel at youtube.com/ethisphere. And if this is your first time enjoying the show, please make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. Thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, remember, strong ethics is good business.